I'd like to go back to the point about language, not understanding why some women insist on changing the spelling of the word woman. I think you have to look at the origin of the word to understand why they do it. As I understand it, it's an Anglo-Saxon word which meant wife of man. Therefore, the female is defined in terms of her relationship to the male, and that's why they object to that particular word, so it's not that particular spelling of the word.
Yes, I mean, sorry.
Yeah, I think that's... I think it's true to say
speak
that...
Up.
Sorry. And I'm getting a bit lost here. I think in many ways the English language itself is inherently sexist. Like, for instance, the word man can either mean the adult male of the species or it can mean the entire species. And I'm sure there are other examples, I can't think of any of them. But I think when you've got a language which is sexist in part, that's going to contribute to sexist ideas.
Yes, I mean, if I can just take those two issues separately. I mean, firstly, the particular word women, which the questioner pointed out is an Anglo-Saxon word that originally meant the wife of man. Well, I don't think that most workers are familiar with that etymological derivation. And I don't think they would be aware that it was had some kind of sexist significance. To them, it's a perfectly acceptable word. And to my mind, it's a perfectly acceptable word. I mean, we could tear the whole English language apart and perhaps find all sorts of evidence of derivations that are, we would term, sexist. But, you know, frankly, I've got better things to do with my time than go through the dictionary and find out the origins of certain words. But your second example, I think, is more important, because the word man used it to mean the human species as a whole, I think, can be problematic. And I think that, again, while I don't want to overemphasize this, I think that we can take reasonable steps to try to use alternative words where there are alternative words. And there are. We can use human beings. We can use human species. I don't think there is another word that we can use instead of women. We could use, you know, members of the female sex, but that's a bit cumbersome by and large.
Yeah.
Well, I just want to add something to that, because I happen to believe that the point you made about the use wherever possible of he and she is very important indeed. I can remember when I used to speak to the CND, I was always talking about Russia and England as though they were entire unities. And luckily, somebody came along and said, "Oh, what are you saying up there? What are you talking about when you talk about Russia? Are you implying an England? Are you implying that every single person there is a whole part of the chauvinistic Raz and the Taz?" And it's very important, because it's become, people say, well, it's just a shorthand way. You can't say Russian representative or a member of the Russian oligarchy all the time. And some years ago, I wrote a little book on the arms race that went into schools, and I carefully avoided doing all that. When the manuscript came back, they struck it all out and put the same old terms time and time again. And the point about the use of he and she, wherever possible, exactly where he is used, what they really say when they say, well, it's a sort of shorthand, you can't put he and she all the time, what they're really implying is that the greater includes the lesser. And that's what you have to be careful about.
Well, I think the moral of that is beware editors.
Is there any other question?
Yeah, I disagree with you slightly about the feminist. It's a bit of a bandwagon about language and with feminists, I think. But I think a lot of Marxists are very familiar with the way that language forms a lot of our ideas about the world that surrounds us, and that the common language that we use can often obscure truths about the world. And it seems to me that sometimes feminists, by picking words, first of all, I suppose I think that the way that feminists try to draw attention to language is often very confused. So sometimes, as you say, they try to draw attention to the etymology of the word and to say, look, therefore it's sexist. And sometimes they try to draw attention to the way that a word is actually used. So, for example, the word ladies is often considered to be a sexist word by women, because it's often used in a sort of derogatory sense, in a sort of second, you come after gentlemen, you know, it's second. And I think that's confused and muddled, and I think that the confusion certainly doesn't help feminists very much. But equally, I don't think that it's necessarily such a good thing to mock all feminists when they draw attention to the etymology of words, because it does help us to recognise the sort of sexist world that we live in and the sort of sexist history that we've inherited, and perhaps to was our resolve to do something about it.
Yes, I mean, I think that we can have useful discussions about language. And certainly, as Marxists, then we need to beware of the ideological use of words, especially words like freedom and equality. And my argument would be that feminists have tended to be sidetracked into looking at the etymology of certain words and not looking at the ideological significance of other words. So that I would think that it would be a far more profitable use of their time to look at what they actually mean by words like equality when they're using it in terms of equality between the sexes. And I think that that's a very under-examined area of word usage. Now, that seems to me to be an area that we as socialists would want to focus on particularly, is to look at words like equality, freedom, the kind of words that are thrown at us all the time, and look at the significance of those for both men and women. And I take your point that yes, sometimes it can be useful to look at the way in which language has helped to construct sexist ideology. But my point is, I mean, maybe I over-mock them, but I personally find it ridiculous to use certain words like women spelt with an I and a double M instead of women. And I think that it goes over the heads of most working women. That is not what they're concerned about. They are very concerned about issues to do with equality. And as I said, you know, what we're given is this sort of very bland assumption that, you know, equality is something that we all understand, that we know what equality looks like. And I don't think we do know what equality looks like. And I think that is an area that is more interesting. And as socialists, I think that is the area that we should be looking at closely.
Right, I've seen you saying it there.
To continue on this question of language, it might seem a bit of a sideline. In fact, I think it's been recognised as quite a lot of importance in all this discussion. We shouldn't overlook the fact that we don't overlook the fact that we quite often remind ourselves that the Great Britain that we, especially in this branch, don't like to use in our time in a great deal because it emphasises misleadingly, the location we have to be in. So we rightly emphasise that we are the Socialist Party, but we sometimes tend to forget just how significant, for better or for worse, the Great Britain is in shaping us and the way we are and the limitations of our awareness and so on. But it's not only us who are affected in that way, by any means. And one of the things that strikes me about these language debates in feminist circles is the characteristic English-speaking linguistic ignorance of language generally, and therefore these nonsenses about history and herstory are partly because of a genuine ignorance of the actual origin of the meaning of the word, which is some of the things with the argument about women. There is some basis for seeing, you know, the one word as being a derivation of the other. But in the case of history, the peculiarity of English is that we draw from two different linguistic main strands, and therefore there's a great deal of confusion in assuming that the HIS in history has got something to do with him. It hasn't. It's a quite different origin. But there's a great deal of confusion of that kind, and I think we should be careful about it. I personally, for example, regard the chairman we have today as excellent. And when I talk about chairman, when I talk about it in the socialist context, it's not telling me anything about sex. I've always found sex irrelevant to the role of chairmanship. So on. But I can see the point. But what I would agree with those who are concerned with trying not to use language, however nonsensical the origins of the significance of those words is, if they are found to be hurtful by the victims, if you like. For example, if you're interested in etymology, Negro means Spanish, is Spanish for black. So why the objection of using the word Negro rather than black? In fact, I've been watching that interesting series on Sunday evenings about the civil rights movement in America. And very interestingly, hear speeches made in the 1950s where leading black spokesman, in fact, use the word Negro. But I'm very sensitive to the fact that etymologically, there's no objection to the word Negro, but the particular rasp and curl in the lip that was for so many years associated with the word Negro, you know, as used by Southern supremacists, was so hurtful, the history of the use of that word, that I'm not unmindful of the need to try and use the word black, although it always seems to me a bit of a nonsense, because if you're trying to say black in Spanish, you've got to say Negro. I understand as well, but that's why I'd like to feel that socialists, at least while they're not getting too bogged down in some of these things, especially as amateur etymology is often, is an English tradition, but often extremely ill-informed, but we should at least be concerned that if we use words, we should try and use the words that are not especially hurtful to the people who have been victims.
Sorry, can I just come back on a couple of things? As I said, I don't want to get bogged down in the issue of language. I do think we have to be aware of the context in which language is used and the force that it has. But I wanted to just say something about history, and to save myself from the accusation that I've been overly hurtful to feminists on their usage of words. Let me just say that I think the feminists have done very useful work in recovering women's history, and that, you know, in a sense, what they're saying in using herstory instead of history is that women's history has often been lost. But what I think that they don't say is that the history of the working class has often been lost. And so the force of using herstory instead of history doesn't take that on board. It doesn't accept that history is also conjures up in most people's mind the history of great wars and kings and queens and so on. What it doesn't do is look at the lives of working class people. And I think that feminists have done, you know, a lot of work, a lot of useful work in covering some of the history of working class women.
Two things. First, if I may, just make a couple of final points, or hopefully final anyway, on this linguistic thing. First of all, I think that the etymology which is suggested is actually not quite right, but I'm not going to go into the details of it at the moment. Secondly, why is it only the plural? You see, there are inconsistencies in the way that feminists do this anyway. It's such a sort of botched job, really. Incidentally, I've come across a spelling of women, W-O-M-Y-N, which seems to be a specifically American feminist. But why is it that they only go sort of part of the way? I mean, if you can't change the basic word woman, there's not much point in changing its plural. It seems pretty stupid, really. But the second area which I would...
Can I just interrupt you on that and say that I have seen women spelled W-U-M-U-N?
Carry on. Well, that will stand corrected. But the second area I wanted to get into was... I came in here after the speech had actually finished, but I did hear from outside some of what was being said at the end, and I didn't notice anything about, maybe you said it earlier on, because you apparently talked about what we've been doing on propaganda, but as somebody who is involved with the socialist standard, do you have any particular views on how that might be altered, specifically on the balance of it adjusted or whatever, or its distribution managed in order to help in attracting more women into the party, which I think is a pretty important target area, if you can call women a target area, a hell of a big one, they are a target area.
Yes, if I could just make one or two comments in particular in relation to the social standard. I think this may sound overly complacent for one of the editors, but I think the socialist standard on the whole does a reasonable job, certainly recently, in eliminating sexist language. We sort of take the red pen to the sexist language when articles are sent to us, and we have sent back articles that we thought were sexist, but we've rejected them on those grounds. But in terms of the issues that we cover, we have tried to take on board issues that are can be considered to be of particular interest to women, issues like rape, like childbirth, like abortion. I think that one of our problems is that we don't have enough women writers. the overwhelming majority of people who write for the Socialist Standard are men. Now, that's not to say that their articles are no good, not to say that their articles don't cover issues that are relevant to women. They do. But, you know, again, I would like to see more women writing for the Socialist Standard. And I think that you know, individual members of the Socialist Party can actively encourage women to write articles. And that helps. Again, you know, it helps to have, you know, the name of a woman under an article, although it's not always apparent, because that again makes it perfectly aware that women. There are historical reasons for that, but there are that I think that again makes it quite clear that women are not only involved in the party but active in the party. And if I can just very briefly mention an anecdote, which was of a letter, a very irate letter that was sent to the party from a woman who complained about the Women and Socialism pamphlet, and she wrote it assuming that a man had written it. She also then wrote attacking the Standard and said, "I assume that the editors are men." Now, seeing as I was involved in the writing of the Women and Socialism pamphlet, and there are two women who are on the editorial committee of the Socialist Standard, the production committee, I took great offence at that assumption. So she was actually adopting the same kind of perspective that you would often expect feminists to attack, namely assuming the people who do the work are men. And I think I wrote quite a strong letter back to her, pointing out that I took offence at that. And I think that it's worth mentioning to people that the SSPC is dominated by women. Certain members of the party have not been entirely happy about that.
But first of all, I'd like to thank the chairperson for finally doing that. It shows the extent of the non-sexual society we live in. To be regarded as opposite marriage. You know, the both of Peel while Rome burned, I certainly think that linguistic debate is a very sterile one. And, everybody tried their best, and it's certainly writing about important issues. I think that the issue and what we learn from feminist ideas is a question, and this came out very clearly in what you said, of the balance of criticism. What, in other words, whether feminism as a whole is something that is more to be criticised negatively or more to be learnt from. I think it is more to be criticised negatively. That isn't to say that there aren't things to learn from, as you pointed out what there are. But I think actually that the socialist position has to be that socialism and the movement standing for socialism stands for the upside of women's liberation. That feminism as a movement for reform or a change in moral consciousness and capitalism is something to which we at best have to teach people how to improve their thinking, and at worst have to be hostile to as something which is reformist. And I don't think that there's a great deal to be gained from pulling out punches on that particular one. In fact, I think it's very patronising if we do try to pull out punches on that and say to people who are, for example, prepared to be condescending on the basis of people's skin colour, that we're going to be very clear and to feminists that we're not. On the question of rights, for example, which Jamie spoke about, I think that is a very important issue. The issue of abortion is something that a lot of people in the room will have very strong views about. And I think that the kind of dictatorial attitude that has come from sections of the left, not necessarily women, and not necessarily women who incidentally have had the kinds of problems that make them have to suffer the agonies of dealing with the problems of termination, but the problems which a lot of women do face, this kind of arrogance of the left in telling doctors and in telling women that what goes on as part of an abortion, all of the psychological side effects, are something that should be accepted as a matter of right, which is itself, as you point out, or alluded to, is a capitalism. It's something very, very dangerous. What socialists, of course, have got to talk about is the artificiality of a system which forces human beings to have to kill other potential human beings in the way that happens on an excessive scale in the world today. In Russia, for example, the official statistics are that every woman in the USSR has 17 abortions in a lifetime. And if you actually look at the Islamic republics within the USSR, where abortion is something that most women don't have, that would mean that in a place like Moscow or Leningrad, women are having even more abortions than that. Now, admittedly, a lot of those must be very early abortions. When you look at things like the issues that came up in Yorktonville, the abortions taking place after 20 weeks. It's just not good enough, and certainly no socialist and no class-conscious worker is going to sit back and listen to people arrogantly telling them that there's no issue to discuss and it's something that human beings haven't got the right to talk about because it's settled. Then there is, in fact, a case of killing and then having to reassemble human bodies during that process. And that's something which I would say is a problem of capitalism we need to look at. Not a problem, incidentally, that we want laws to deal with, because the whole point of the socialist point out is that we don't have laws and we don't want a society of laws. And I want to also say that something very important and a piece of useful propaganda for people in this room to deal with, to point out, is that for those who say what we need are more women in parliament, and because the feminist movement has been particularly absurd in arguing that we need more women generals in the army, and we need more women to do more women judges, and more women to do all kinds of other dirty, stinky jobs than men have done in the past for capitalism. I think we've got to, if you actually take a look at the list in Hansard of voting on the recent autumn bill, you'll find that more women voted in favour of the autumn bill than voted against the autumn bill in the House of Commons. Not a lot of publicity was given to that, but it certainly doesn't follow that women going into Parliament are going to represent the apparent interests of women more than men. But the final point I want to raise, Comrade Chair, and I want to throw out, because I think it's a more useful discussion than the one about words, that's my view of course, is that you see, it comes out of what we said yesterday, that I think that the real problem, and it came early in Jane's very interesting talk, is about the personal responsibility of workers. That the danger, and Marxism in a sense provides this as a temptation to a lot of people, is to say, ah well, nuclear weapons are something we've got no control over whatsoever, or very little. Therefore, it's very easy for anyone to come along and say, nuclear weapons are a terrible thing, we are fundamentally opposed to it. It's very easy for people to say mass starvation is a terrible thing. We are going to be most vociferous and angry in our opposition to that, and so on. What, of course, people have got control over is what they do with their own lives. And it seems to me that people who call themselves socialists, who do make use of pornography and what that does to women, and people who call themselves socialists, who are abusive towards other sections of the society that they live in on the basis of the gender or sexual orientation of those people, and people who call themselves socialists, who make choices, consciously or otherwise, that they are going to live in ways which perpetuate all of the rottenness and divisiveness of sexism, those people have actually got some answering to do, because it's, there's a very simple word for it in moral language, which we socialists don't tend to use, is hypocrisy. And this came out of a discussion we had in Islington, France some time ago, and in fact you, Conrad Chair, raised the point yourself. If you're a socialist, you haven't got a chance to act as a socialist and to behave as a socialist most of your life, because although we're against the wages system, we can't work without wages. And although we're against the state, we can't ignore the policeman when he tells us to move on. But if you're in favour of a society of sexual equality and all other forms of equality, then what are some socialists doing perpetuating these things and accepting the conditioning that have made them into the kind of rotten products and a rotten system that they're supposed to be against? What kind of success is that going to move them out?
I want to respond very briefly, because in broad terms I agree with what a lot of what Comrade Coleman has said. Firstly, on the question of abortion, I would say that we're right to reject any person who sets themselves up as moral guardians and says that we should behave in one way or another. So just as I would want to question feminists who tell me that I should, as a certain kind of woman, be in favour of, let's say, abortion on demand, so do I want to oppose somebody who, from a point of view of a Catholic potential priest, but also tells me that I should also behave in a certain kind of way. And I think that we need to be careful to reject both sides of that. On the question of personal behaviour, I used to take the kind of view that what people did in the privacy of their own home was their own business. Now, I still think that in broad terms that's true. And as a true liberal in these matters, I think that we need to pay attention to what John Stuart Mill says about these things, namely that what people do in private, in privacy, is fine so long as it doesn't affect other people. If it hurts other people, then we have to start reassessing what's going on. And I think that, again, and this is something that I've changed my mind on considerably, I think that pornography is one of those issues, that it is no longer acceptable to say, but, you know, I sit in my own bedroom and wank on my own over pictures of nude women, and, you know, I'm not hurting anybody else. Because I think it does hurt other people, because it does contribute in a major way to the kind of culture, sexual culture, that I referred to earlier. And I think that we have to take that on board, that it is not just private behaviour, it is private behaviour that has very real effects on women's lives and how they're perceived.
Can I raise another aspect in which I think you could argue that the Socialist Party has been influenced by male values? It's leaving aside any question of institutional sexism, which obviously isn't. And it's also leaving aside, you know, the undesirable behaviour, particularly individuals on public pensions, which are going to occur. What I have in mind is this. I'd make an exception of the socialist standard as it is at present, but looking at it historically, it'd be difficult to deny that the form of propaganda that the party has chosen to employ has been extremely pugnacious and aggressive. It very often involves sneering at people whose view of capitalism you disagree with, and how to disagree. And I think of, for instance, speaking to a comrade in my own branch about a debate he went to and asking what it was like, and he said, "Oh, it was great, we wiped the floor with them." And you hear members talking about the need to nail the working class, if we were in the crucifixion. Now, both the speaker today and Steve Dalziger have put before us quite accurately the particular image of the male that men are supposed to conform to, supposed to be brave and aggressive and strong and that's immoral. And I think that, you know, that there has been a danger that in much of the Socialist Party's propaganda, it's conformed to that stereotype of the traditional in a way which is extremely unfortunate and off-putting for people, because when you wipe the floor with people, they might be good for joining the movement, they're not really good for joining a self-confident revolution. And this does seem to be one area in which the party could benefit from, quotes, feminine values, because not only is that approach likely to put up any kind of woman who's had the least awakening to all this from the women's movement, it, in my view, puts up a lot more women's movement.
Yeah, can I just comment briefly on that? I mean, I think that there's some truth in what you say, but I think that we have to be careful that we don't find the right words. We don't compromise our hostility towards other groups. I think there are certain occasions where hostility, which is quite overt, is made clear, and I think that there are ways you can do that, which may be more effective than taking that particularly aggressive stance that you have been referring to. And I think that there are other occasions with groups where we feel that there is more potential common interest for adopting a softer view, so that there are occasions when formal adversarial debates are appropriate, and other occasions where a discussion forum may be a better means of conducting our propaganda. So I think that we can take that on board. I mean, I also think that it's, to some extent, you know, horses for courses, really, that I think that you know, certain kinds of propaganda appeal to certain kinds of people. And it is the case that the sort of tub-thumping, rebel-rousing stuff goes down well with some workers. And, you know, we may say, well, you know, perhaps that's not the best way of doing it, but we can, and maybe getting people into the party who don't perhaps share broader values that we would like them to share, but maybe we can work on that later. I would personally say that what we need is a range of different kinds of speaking techniques, and that I think that what would be nice is to see some of the women doing the rebel-rousing, tub-thumping stuff as well.
There's three more people that I'm going to take with first.
I think the whole of this discussion this afternoon is about presenting socialism to a non-sexed workers. You know, I mean, we shouldn't make a differentiation between men and women as members of the working class. Nevertheless, we have to bear in mind that the Socialist Party came into existence at a time when there was greater differentiation about the role of women, and the whole of the political atmosphere at that time was very, very much more aggressive. And I would suggest that some of the party aggressiveness which took place was a damn good thing, because I could imagine that without it, the party would have gone into oblivion. Nevertheless, of course, we don't have to keep up the mistakes or apparent mistakes that have been made in history. And I can appreciate that the kind of arguments and articles that used to appear in the Socialist Standard years ago were of a kind that we shouldn't carry for the present time.
Can I just make one comment, which is on the earlier part of what you say? I disagree with you, comrade, about not making a differentiation in our propaganda, because I think that we have to be aware of the way in which it is received. And while ideally we would like there to be, like it to be a possibility for us to appeal to a whole working class in an undifferentiated way, I think that we do have to recognise that the fact is that we do live in a society which is sexually divided, and that for whatever reasons, there women or many women, working class women, will have, if not perceive their interests to be different from men, but at least perceive that there are issues that are closer to their hearts than are closer to those of men, and things to do with childcare and reproduction are the obvious area. So I think that although those issues are human issues, not female issues, I think that we can usefully take that fact on board in our propaganda and, if you like, emphasise the point that we want women as well as men. Because I think that you know, we have to, in a sense, look at the history of the party, as you rightly said, and the fact of the matter is that our propaganda hasn't been very good in attracting women members of the working class into the party. And as one of the issues that we're thinking about, I'm not saying that it should be the main issue or the only issue, but I think one of the issues that we need to think about is why that's not been the case. And perhaps it has got something to do with the nature of our propaganda that we can change the emphasis of. I'm not saying that we change the substance of it, but we change the emphasis of it.
Let's start with saying I don't think that aggression that we can't use for speaking, which is necessarily bad. Certainly aggression where it's directed against the person whose ideas are opposing. If you're directing your arguments against that person or a group, then it's very unproductive. Clearly you're going to alienate people that you're speaking to, you're probably going to alienate the people who are listening to the argument. Steve Dowsett mentioned just the reason why people who are male in capitalism are conditioned to acquire certain characteristics. One of them is that this is being belligerent, which associated with being virile and so on. A lot of people who involved in speaking into the Socialist Party might be male, might have those sort of characteristics.
Occasionally I've seen those used very badly. I've seen that aggression directed against personal characteristics or people, but more often than not, it's I've seen it directed in a way which is, it can be quite helpful, that's to say, it's energetic and it's forceful. And maybe that sort of cogency argument, I don't think it's necessarily a bad thing. Provided, of course, that you know the other quite heavily fighting good humour, it's not personal, and so on. Particularly when you bear in mind that there is a the way workers are conditioned to grow up, there is a certain sort of lack of confidence. And where the Socialist Party literature or speakers are able to put a very forceful argument, especially against particularly horrible sort of characters in capitalism, you know, particularly Tory characters, perhaps the reformers, but where people are outright outrageous defenders of the public system, where arguments can be very forcefully put against those, I think there is a certain sort of satisfaction that can be got by people listening to the argument or reading the literature, to think, well, the Socialist Party has got it right. And the more forcefully they put that, the we put that, the more satisfaction they can be. People, there's a way in which people quite like to associate, become involved in a movement whose arguments are forcefully.
There's one more contribution.
I just want to say, I think perhaps this is a bit more fortunate than that there's really your entrance. But I know that in Robinson, I think sexism is really important to most of our members. And I remember examples in Africa, where there's a cold, you know, women who come along, big by friends or husbands, not followers, you know, we never got a good time. Not actually there, but he just happens to come along with the law. In situations like this, a woman takes a walk on to you, he's an interesting person, and you know, I think it's quite subtle, I don't think it's a man with that, you know, you don't appreciate, you know, that's that.
I think, as a pedestrian and a cyclist, I just refer to bloody drivers, but you know, <laughs> <laughs> you know, as a pedestrian and a cyclist, I just refer to bloody drivers, but there you go. But I mean, on the first point, Joan, I mean, I think that that's absolutely right, is that if we should, however women come along to party meetings, we should take them seriously and assume that they're there because they want to be and that they are genuinely interested in our ideas. And we have to take them seriously at that level. And I think that that's important. And I think that there's a, you know, a strong case for telling men who behave in that way to shut up and put them right on that particular issue.